All right, I'm here. How are you?
Sweet. I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So I got to watch the rest of Grisha yesterday. So
fantastic.
Yes.
You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
Hey everyone, thanks for coming back this week. It's been a while since I got a new episode of this podcast posted. However, there have been a few new episodes of Reddit Horror Club, and there's a new Drive All Night hopefully coming this week too. And finally, after talking about it for months, the first episode of Far Out Kids Cast, my son's podcast, is going to get up hopefully by this weekend. But it is definitely getting up real, real soon. I'm bringing him and his brother to see Playdate this weekend, which is Greg Attenito from Bouncing Souls and his wife, Shanti Wintergate, who are awesome and great with kids and actually remembered my kids by name when I talked to them last. Really cool, and my kids are super stoked to go see them again. So hopefully they'll be guests on an upcoming episode of his podcast as well. They were on a previous episode of this podcast, so you might have gotten a chance to hear them on the episode where I talked to some folks on the Fun Fun record label, which is a sub-label of Asian Man Records, favorite record label of mine from when I was a kid, or still a favorite record label of mine, but an indie label I've listened to since I was maybe 13, probably the same year it started, or very close to. So, that said, I wanted to just give you a quick recap, or not recap, but preview of a few things that are coming up. So, first, besides that Tony Rettman Drive All Night episode that I referenced, I didn't mention Tony when I referenced it, but Tony is an awesome author who's been hosting something called Green Room Radio, which is actually wrapping up, but he's going to be doing another podcast soon, hopefully. So you'll get to hear him talk about that if you check out Drive All Night. If you don't subscribe to that, you can check that out right here on the Farsighted website. If you click on the show notes to the website, you could definitely check that out if you're listening to this from whatever you listen to on Stitcher or iTunes or wherever else this is currently posted. I believe it's posted on several other sites, and I don't know how it got there. It must be aggregators and all that stuff. I'm rambling. Okay, so besides Tony, I also have a bunch of stuff coming on this episode. I have a tribute to Prince coming up, which you'll hear a song of his now, just because I wanted to share one. Besides the tribute to Prince, I also have a couple other guests. Hayden Shaw, another writer who's talking about generational sensibilities. A couple directors, one named L. Sawyer, who hopefully will be part of a several-week look at criminal justice issues, because he's a returning citizen, which, if you don't know what that means, it is what, here in Philadelphia, we call ex-offenders who come back from jail. It's actually an adopted term for the city of Philadelphia. Take away some of the stigma. And the film he did called Pull of Gravity is all about the issues that folks face coming out of jail. And then another filmmaker who directed a really awesome film, documentary called Sympathy for the Devil, which I got to see a screening of. And hopefully we'll do a write-up here on the site sometime soon. He is a really, really cool guy from Britain whose name escapes me, and I feel like a jerk. But Neil. It's Neil. So Neil just wrote back to me, and we're going to try to hook up, and that's really cool. Another really awesome guest on the horizon is James Duvall. If you're not familiar with James Duvall, he played Frank in Donnie Darko. He played, God, I could probably go on and on for a long time, but I got in touch with him because of SLC Punk 2, and that's just really, really awesome. A bunch of other guests are hopefully going to be coming to fruition very soon. I'm very, very excited for a lot of stuff coming up. So please check out all the podcasts and all the stuff that's coming up. And really, just thanks for coming back and checking this out. Or if you're new, thanks for checking us out for the first time. I'm going to turn it over to the interview with Wilson after a brief interstitial from Prince, who you all know recently passed, and an amazing, amazing, amazing musician. Seems like a really quirky and fun dude as well, who really made it okay for a lot of outsider kids to be weird, kind of like Bowie did a decade before him. Really, really good dude, and I'm very excited to get a chance to do a little tribute to him, which is going to be mostly music, maybe some sound clips, actually definitely some sound clips and stories from folks, and it'll just be something to listen to if you're interested in checking out some of his music all in one place, along with some really cool stories about him and whatnot. So that's it, and thanks again, and here is Prince, and here is Wilson. Take care. See you next week.
Performing the B-side classic, She's Always in My Hair, Prince and Third Eye Girl.
Whenever I feel like giving up, whenever my sunshine turns to rain, whenever my hopes and dreams aim in the wrong direction, she's always there, telling me just how much you care.
Well, my name is Wilson Smith, and I am a filmmaker based out of Austin, Texas, and most recently I produced the feature film Kreisha, written and directed by my good friend Trey Edward Schultz, and starring Kreisha Fairchild, his aunt. And yeah, we've had quite the little ride with this this movie.
So wait, Kreisha is Trey's aunt?
Yes, she is.
Oh, cool. So he plays her son, though, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And it's funny because his actual mother, Robin, plays his sort of, I guess it is already sort of getting into spoilers, but sort of surrogate mother to him in the film.
I got you. So his aunt and his mom, like, swap roles.
Yeah, basically. It's kind of weird, but, you know, his aunt, has been a professional actress for, you know, past 25 years, but she just hasn't had any great, you know, any really plum roles offered to her, and she sort of you know, fell out of you know, she moved from Los Angeles and she's been living in Mexico, and so Trey just had faith in her and, like, you know, grown up with her his whole life. He was like, oh, I think she would be perfect in, you know, give a great performance in my movie.
Awesome, awesome. Well, and for those listening who aren't familiar, Kreisha is it Kreisha? Kreisha, am I pronouncing it right?
It's pronounced Kreisha.
Kreisha, okay. So Kreisha is a new film that is in select theaters around the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know when it's going to be releasing in home format?
I don't just yet.
Okay.
But
are they hoping more for like a wide release? Like, is it doing well enough that it could get a wider release, or?
It's probably winding down its run.
Okay.
Right now, it's you know, it's very you know, we didn't set the world on fire, but for what the movie cost and for what the movie is, I think we're all pretty happy with how it
awesome.
How it's been doing.
Well, and I mean, it got a lot of buzz. I saw it won a couple of awards at South by Southwest last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously a great. And is this Trey's first movie as a director?
Yeah, it's his first feature, and what's funny is that he had actually attempted to make the feature a few years before, and it didn't work out. He freely admits this. He said this in interviews. You know, he didn't have what he needed. He wasn't quite there yet
mm-hmm.
as a director, and so he spent, you know, he sat on that footage for about a year and edited it into a 12-minute short film, which then played at South by Southwest in 2014, and it won a prize for cinematography. And then that summer of 2014, he informed me that he was planning on trying to get the feature, another go at the feature.
Okay.
And that's when I was not involved in the short film, but when it came time to do the feature, he asked if I wanted to come on board, and I said, yes, absolutely.
Awesome. And have you been friends with Trey for some time? Is he someone you've known for a long time? Or?
We met, actually, it would have been right after he filmed the short a couple of years back. We met as production assistants on these Terrence Malick movies that he filmed back in 2012. And, you know, what's funny is that Knight of Cups, which was the Los Angeles Malick film, that film released more or less at the same time as Creature did, even though it was filmed several years beforehand.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that is pretty wild. So you guys worked together, and, you know, you've kept in touch since, and, you know, now you've been able to have a working relationship, and, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing, you all of us sort of kids at the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak, on set, where we're the assistants and the PAs, and, you know, we were all sort of, you know, talking amongst ourselves, and, you know, it was like, oh, you know, myself and Trey and one of the other producers, a guy named Chase Joliet, who was also working on the Malick stuff, we all just agreed, like, hey, we should keep in touch and make movies after this, and for once it was not, you know, an idle threat.
Right. That's awesome. And so, you know, jumping over to you a little bit before I talk a little bit more about the film, because I have some, you know, some little, maybe a little spoiler territory, but I'll try to stay too far from it. With you, so this is you are the producer of this film, or one mm-hmm. of the producers, or are there multiple? Like, what was the?
There were, it was myself, one of Trey's longtime friends, a guy named Justin Chan, and then Chase Joliet, whom
the other
I'd worked
person
with.
You mentioned. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. And have you produced before?
That was my very first producing anything gig.
Okay.
So it was sort of trial by fire.
Cool. Hey, well, I think that's the kind of thing that you probably, that's probably the best way to learn in a weird way. It's just
totally.
Thrown in and figure it out, you know. But and obviously that's pretty awesome. And you have worked on other films as a production assistant. Have you done anything else at any other specific films? What's your kind of your role been in different places?
Before I produced, funny enough, the very first sets that I ever worked on were those Malick sets. So I got this very weird sort of atypical introduction to film production.
Right.
And then after that, I spent a few years just as sort of a freelance PA working on commercials in town. And then I ended up working for several days on the Texas shoot of Transformers 4, which I can't remember the subtitle, Age of Extinction. That's it.
That's funny.
And then worked on that. And then I also, I was a PA on some test shoots for Midnight Special. And then I actually,
well, that's pretty cool.
And then before that, I was actually an editorial intern, for Mud. So I've worked for, in addition to Malick. I've worked for Jeff Nichols as far as these Austin-based filmmakers go. And so, yeah, I've kind of got, you know, being in Austin for the past 5 years, I've sort of, you know, I haven't worked for Linklater or Robert Rodriguez yet, but otherwise I feel like I've sort of hit some of the big Austin folks. I've worked for Dave, and also I did some time on Manglehorn, the David Gordon Green film. So that was all, you know, that was all my stuff as a production assistant, really. And it was a, you know, it was interesting. It was a, it's you know, being a PA, it can be stressful and intense,
right.
But you know, sure. Also it can be very fun. You know, Transformers 4, you know, that seems like a ridiculous gig, but it was a $200 million studio movie, so it was amazing catering, and I got to watch things blow up real good.
There you go. You got some good food, and you got to watch some explosions. Nothing bad about that. Sounds like a good day to me.
Exactly. It was pretty great.
Awesome. Hey, so just a question. You said you've been in Austin for about 5 years. Where were you before that?
Before that, I was in school. I'm from Georgia originally, and
okay.
I went to college in Alabama at Auburn University.
Okay.
And so I graduated from there, and I needed a I was trying to get into film production, and everyone was saying you should move out to LA or New York, and I'd never been to LA at that point. And so I just was like, I don't know, maybe someplace that's cool. And then I visited Austin for South by Southwest in 2011 and sort of fell in love with it. And I was like, yeah, I could try it out here.
And like, at least you're still in the South, still a little bit like home.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good, you know, I still, you know, being here for 5 years, I see, you know, I still think it's a really great atmosphere. And I know a lot of cool folks in town and the industry. It's sort of a tight-knit group who work in film here. And I still think it's great.
That's awesome. And I'm from Philadelphia area these days. I grew up in
cool.
Northern New Jersey. And so I met you know, Ed, who we know through Synapse, you know, runs he's our fearless leader over at Synapse.
Yep.
You know, Ed and I went to college together, and you know, so I feel like I know, although not physically know, a lot of people over the internet
right.
from Austin, because it seems like a lot of the folks, you know, are from that area because they, you know Ed. And and so it's interesting to see. It does sound like it's a really interesting town in many ways. And also, you know, as far as film goes, definitely kind of a cool spot to be.
It's cool to see like the people. I mean, like Jeff Nichols is probably the best, you know, recent example, I feel like, because he is sort of, his career is on the rise, and he's sort of making, you know, making waves for himself, you know, as he goes further into his career, and he still sort of home bases out of Austin.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's sort of, you know, to all the people who are like, well, you need to be, and people don't say this about film production so much anymore. It's more television. But when people are like, oh, you know, you got to be in L.A. because that's where all the action is, it's like, well, you know, then there are these people who, you know, Rick Linklater has been doing it for, you know, 20-something years. And,
right.
And you know, Jeff and of course, Terry Malick. I mean, he's,
right.
you know, all these people who have been able to in one way or another, they're all kind of outliers in their own way, but they've also
right.
been able to make it work with you know, not, you know, being able to do their thing and also having a little bit of, at the very least, physical distance from the heart of the machine. And that's sort of that's like a platonic ideal for what I would like to do in my
awesome.
career.
That's awesome. And I feel like it seems like, especially with the names you mentioned being kind of the big figures of Austin's, you know, film community, it seems like it's a little bit different, a little bit offbeat from something like in L.A., and I think that's cool because, I don't know, I kind of gravitate towards something that's a little bit different than the machines. And,
yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, those guys are all a little bit off-center, you know, a little bit different. And and I think that's, you know, it sounds like that's what the scene is there. You know,
yeah.
Is that pretty much fair? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's so, again, it's so like, it's so sort of chill, and you know, so many, you know, everyone sort of knows everybody. And you know, here at the, we have the Austin Film Society here in town, which Rick Linklater founded back in the day, and they have just, it's a nonprofit, and they just have really amazing screenings, both of new stuff and old stuff, 35 millimeter, DCP, what have you. And it's, you know, it's not at all, you know, Rick himself will, you know, has a, you know, usually has a series every year where he'll, you know, talk about the films that they're playing afterwards. And, you know, it's not uncommon to, you know, see David Gordon Green at these screenings, and everyone's just sort of, it's not like a huge, like, oh my God, that's David Gordon, you know, it's a, everyone's pretty chill about it, and it feels like a, yeah, it's a real nice community here. And it does have a, you know, I lived in LA for 3 months while we were making Night of Cups, and so I only got a little, you know, not representative, I'm certain, but it still felt, you know, for my money, Austin still feels like it has this sort of, I don't know if intimate is exactly the right word, but it feels a little smaller, a little more, yeah, cozy.
I think if it weren't for the fact that, like, Texas summers, I would think Austin would be the best place ever. But I don't know that I can do a summer in Texas myself.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where if I, like, I don't know, like, if I could, like, find an excuse to, like, maybe go to LA for 2 months out of the year just to escape and be like, oh hey, at the very least the weather is perfect. I hope the big one doesn't hit while I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny, because I even when I spent time in, you know, for a week down south in the summertime, I'm always like, oh, that's why I don't live down here.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm a northerner. It's funny, I went to Key West I went to the Keys, and we went down to Key West one day that we were staying down there back in, it was before I had kids, so it was like 8 years ago, 9 years ago. But the one day it was like 65 degrees. It was like a chilly day for them. And and I'm walking through town with a t-shirt and shorts, and everybody else walking through with like parkas on. So we went kind of not quite during tourist season. We were just kind of like, you know. And it was funny. People kept looking at me like, aren't you cold? And I actually got asked that by like 3 or 4 people. I'm like, I'm from the north. You know, like, I'm from the north. This is great. This is t-shirt and shorts weather, man. This is fantastic.
Exactly.
So, you know, but it just says something, you know, like where you're from, what you're used to, you know, it's just funny, you know, how different that can be. Of course, you know, I don't think I would miss the Northeast winters at all. So,
sure. Yeah. You know. Yeah. You know about that. I've not spent much time around the colder climate, so it's not that's something that if I had to move up there, it'd be sort of similar to your summer, the summer thing. I would just, I'm sure, have several meltdowns.
Right. Well, like for me, like, you know, just to put it in perspective, last week it was, you know, in the 60s, even hit 70 one day. And then on Saturday, we had snow. March mm-hmm. into like mid April, it's like drunk weather. Like it goes back and forth like crazy. You never know like what to expect. It's crazy. So I will not miss it another week or two when it's done being crazy. Hopefully Saturday was the last of the weird cold snowy thing. So
yeah. Yeah, we've had a little bit of crazy, like, you know, El Nino-ish stuff here in Austin, too, where it's just been, like, you know, swinging wildly between, like, cool and hot, and it's just been hell on my allergies.
I'm sure, man. I'm feeling it. I get you.
So it's just been, but I think hopefully we're sort of, now that we're, you know, a little bit into April, it'll be, like, you know, finally sort of tending towards, you know, it'll set the heat starts to turn up here.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like you'll hit like my peak summer weather, you know, where it's the hottest here, probably like next month.
Yep.
You know, so,
exactly.
You know, crazy. But so back into film a little bit. So Krisha, there we go, Krisha. So that particular movie, my immediate thoughts were, and I think, you know, not after looking and seeing what other people have to say, it's not like I'm alone, is that it felt almost more like a horror movie than it did just a family drama. Except that it wasn't a horror movie in the what happens as much as it is in the tone. Like, the tone of the movie is, like, some of the most tense, like, the tension is just incredible. Like, it's almost hard to watch at points, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, was there an influence from stuff like horror thrillers, you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the biggest influences, you know, that Trey talked about beforehand and during the production, both as far as, I guess, the sort of tone that he was going for and the way he wanted to shoot the particular space, that because it's all set in that one house, he talked about The Shining.
Oh, okay.
And The Shining was... The Shining, we, you know, the crew watched it a few times during production, you know, after we wrapped, everyone was sort of staying in that house anyway. So it was just, you know, everyone bundle up in a room and watch the movies together. And so The Shining was definitely a big influence and Drew Daniels, our cinematographer, as far as, you know, the way that he, you know, some of those, like, you know, the more elegant gliding shots. I'm thinking about, like, the grandmother when she's first introduced in the wheelchair, and camera's just sort of slowly zeroing in on the action, and it starts kind of far back, and it's just, you know, really gliding, almost, you know, ghost-like towards the characters. And so, yeah, The Shining is the big one that stands out, but it also, I mean, there's the emotional, the feeling of it is definitely sort of, it's so heightened that it does feel very much like it does have, like, almost the emotional texture of a horror movie.
Right, right. And, I mean, it's more effective horror than a lot of the horror I've seen before, like, recently. like, I mean, I honestly felt more on the edge of my seat, intense, watching it than I did many movies that, you know, are designed as horror movies that are supposed to elicit that for me. And so, you know, obviously the tension has a lot to do with the brilliance of the film. I mean, it's a great film. I gave it an unbiased version, 4.5 stars, and biased since, you know, I'll give it 5. But in all honesty, you know, my actual opinion is that it's a good 4.5 star movie. It's really, really good. And, you know, to know that, some of the people in the film were more, you know, it was their first time, you know, doing stuff. Mm-hmm. That's impressive. You know, really, and you know, I even say with Trey, was he an actor prior? Is this one of his first acting roles?
No, he was not an actor prior at all, except for, again, in the short film. And, you know, I got to say, it's a, you know, I've been... Throughout, even, you know, knowing Trey for years before we made the movie, you know, I knew he was, you know, obviously very, you know, movie savvy and a very talented guy, and I was excited to see, you know, what he could do with, you know, his first movie, and, you know, I now when I watch the movie, I sort of, you know, it's like I can sort of take a step back from it and sort of marvel at, you know, that scene with Trey where it's he and Krisha alone in that room where she's sort of trying to reach him, talking about, you know, his schooling, whether he's going back to school, all that sort of stuff. You know, the more I watch that scene, the more I'm like, you know, it's so, you know, it's sort of like the film in a nutshell, as far as, like, it's so nakedly honest. And so, mm-hmm. you know, Trey is just really, you know, that's a very, you know, I don't think I would have the courage to put myself in the scene having, you know, basically, you know, very real family history, you know, just very unfictional, like not fictionalized or barely fictionalized versions of my life sort of on screen for everyone to react to. And I just think, yeah, so I think that his performance, in addition mm-hmm. to, you know, everything else that he does in the film, you know, it just, the more I think about it, the more I sort of get some perspective on it, I'm just so, so impressed with him. And I told him this.
Right, right. Well, that's awesome. And I mean, and, you know, and just, like, that makes it all the more impressive, like, seeing people who, you know, are, you know, for all intents and purposes, amateurs. They're new to this. They're novices, and to be able to come away with such a great product. I mean, you know, he is definitely extremely believable in his role. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, if you were a child who's scarred by their mother, the way he acts is appropriate for all, you know, I mean, you would, I've seen, you know, friends of mine who've had those kind of relationships be that kind of person, you know, and I definitely see it, you know, and like I said, I'm trying to stay away from too many spoilers, but I definitely see how that makes sense. And it's not really a spoiler saying, you know, cause it's from the beginning, you know, she, Krisha is claiming that she, and claiming, and I, you know, whether you want to believe or not, and time's going to go on, that she's sober for the first time in years, and everybody is pretty much, you know, nervous about her being around because there's an obvious, really strong past with her and the family that you don't really know the extent of, and but you know it's there. So, you know, that's the setup right there, and her, you know, Trey being the son is definitely, you know, I definitely see that. And a lot of the other characters, what's interesting about them all is their very subtle performances in a lot of ways, because they're very much background, a lot of them. But it all feels real. Like, it all feels like you're actually watching a family at Thanksgiving, you know, and a family who, you know, there's the black sheep family member who's there, but there's also little, you know, normal squabbles and chats and whatever going on that's just kind of normal. You know, I mean, like, it feels like Thanksgiving, but there's that tension the whole time because of Krisha, you know.
And
you know, obviously it is going to come to a head at one point or another, and we'll just leave it at that. But it's just fantastic. And so, you know, is you said this was Trey's, you know, first, and his aunt was, you know, the star of the film. Did he write the film? Did she help write it? What was that about?
He wrote it himself, and the script was, he'll be the first to admit, and he has in interviews before, but, the script was sort of, a little bit, you know, not, it was more fleshed out than an outline, but it was also like there was, I think Trey had, because he had previously attempted to shoot the feature, I think that so much of it, a lot of it was in Trey's head as far as, you know, and there were certain things in the script, like, you know, it specifically had the camera movements for, like, several, like, many of the scenes. It specified those in the script. But, so, you know, what was interesting was that when we made the movie, we made it in 9 days. And
wow.
And when we did that, it's kind of funny. I mean, we would go, you know, around 10, 12 hour days every day of filming, but we would usually, oddly enough, for a movie that was on such a, you know, a limited schedule, we would kind of get through our scenes that we needed, you know, to make our day. We would get through these scenes, you know, sometimes like halfway through our day, and it was like, well, you know, what else do we want to do? Everyone, you know, everyone's here. It's not like everyone's going back to a hotel, or, you know, it's not like putting people on call. So we would just get little snippets of family activity to, you know, to play with in the edit if we wanted to. And so, you know, that's when we have the arm wrestling competition between the two guys. A lot of the guys, like, messing around was sort of, you know, those were just little vignettes that, you know, we set up, and it was like, oh, this, that would be funny if these guys did this, or if, you know, if this was what was going on. It was all just sort of, you know, that was getting the material for, you know, it's very, you know, sort of impressionistically edited. But I think that stuff, it's interesting because it does give you in a sort of not subtle, but, sort of like understated way, it gives you this very, male energy in the house, you know, in contrast to the, you know, obviously the female energy of Krisha and Robin's performance and all that. You know, it's an interesting mixture, I think, and it does give that sort of, give an interesting family dynamic that feels real to me based on, you know, the Thanksgivings that I've been to.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I completely agree. That it feels very real, and I get that makes sense. You know, that you got those little vignettes to kind of throw in to make it, you know, they're somewhat quirky and different, but that's what family is. You know what I mean? And, you know, so family, you know, if it was your Hollywood family story, it would lack that realness a lot of times, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, that's probably why some of those, you know, Thanksgiving type movies never resonate with me, because they don't feel as real. And then the ones that do are the ones that stick with me, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, it's definitely a great film, and it's definitely interesting in how that was done. Is Trey working on anything else as far as, you know, what's going to be his follow-up to this?
Oh, yeah. We, so A24 are really amazing distributors. They've just been so incredible, and they've really believed in the film and in Trey and in the team. And they actually, when they picked us up for distribution, they also, for the first time in their company history, they signed Trey for a, two-picture deal, including Krisha being the first and, his follow-up being the second, and they are going to, help with financing on that. And so that is just, that's well underway. We're working on it as we speak. As far, you know, we're in pre-production and still doing, like, you know, just casting stuff and various other things. But it's definitely moving along, and the script is really, really good. And it's, you know, I said that the script for Krisha was sort of, you know, a little bit more like, you know, a little more bare bones, but the script for Trey's next one, which is, by the way, a full horror movie. It's an actual,
oh, nice.
It is an actual horror film. So, you know, that's, if Krisha felt like one, the next one actually is. And
well,
yeah,
I think he's prepared for it.
Exactly.
So that's,
yeah,
good. That's good.
And you know, the idea, and I think that it's also, the movie's a little bit, you know, because he wrote it before, you know, we had any sort of distribution deal, and so the movie itself, you know, it was planned for, you know, the idea of a certain budget level, and so it's pretty contained still, as far as locations and cast members go. But it's, you know, I think that now that he's, you know, he's just you know, a total rock star now, I think he's gonna you know, it's gonna have some real room to explore and play with some stuff. And I can't wait to.
Did you say you're producing on this one too, then?
Yes. And awesome. We'll have, you know, the same, you know, the same DP, Drew Daniels.
Oh, nice.
I'm certain that we'll also get our amazing composer, Brian McComber, to do it, because he did such great work for Krisha.
Mm.
And yeah,
are,
so that.
Are any of the actors going to come back around? I'm just curious.
You know, not in that, unfortunately. But, you know, speaking of that, I, you know, one of the things that, you know, I don't, all the, you know, the success that Krisha has had with critics and everything like that, you know, there's not much that I, you know, it's all just been wonderful, you know, icing on the cake, basically, after we, you
right.
know, got the movie done. It's just been this really great thing. So I don't, you know, I hate to sound like, I, you know, I'm, you know, presuming or expecting too much, but I really, one of the biggest things that I hope comes out of Krisha is that Krisha herself, Krisha Fairchild, starts getting cast in movies, because
oh, I really
just,
hope so too. She was amazing.
She's just incredible.
The intensity of her performance, when she, you know, puts on her happy face in different points, you know, it just feels like someone really trying, but there's behind there where you know it's, she just does such a great job. Throughout. I mean, I definitely, and she's so expressive. She's
mm-hmm.
so much is said just through her face throughout the movie. And I mean, obviously it's set up like that from the beginning. But she's so good at just, you know, telling the story just by her facial expression, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I'm very, very impressed with her. And I was really, you know, that was actually kind of where I would go in my next question was, you know, do you think that this is going to be a, you know, something for her? And if, you obviously hope it is, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, luckily, and this is, it's been funny watching, seeing how this works, but, we've heard, people, lots of people in the industry as far as, like, actors or writers and, people who, we've heard that, the movie has many fans in the industry, and so I only hope that some of these people are, when they're watching it, they're not just thinking, oh, this guy Trey is this, amazing new talent, although he absolutely is. I hope they're looking at Krisha and being like, oh, okay, this is a woman who, kind of had her, she's not, Hollywood doesn't make movies about women her age. And,
no.
And that whole thing.
Especially not normal looking women her age.
Exactly.
She just looks normal. She's not unattractive. She's not, this bombshell. She's a normal person.
Exactly. And that to me, that to me is what, it feels in the, in the context of when we were making it, it was like, oh no, this is, we're making the movie with, what we have, and we have these, this great actress. But yeah, it just, it almost seems like a radical act when you put it in the context of, 99.9% of movies that come out, especially in this country, where it's just like, oh, like that, having a, I read a review of Krisha where it kind of said, it was kind of marveling at the fact that, like you said, she's a normal looking person, and she's, in her early 60s, and and it just, I don't know. It's kind of funny because it is like, oh wow, yeah. Like I think we sort of did show like, hey, like why aren't there more opportunities for people like her?
Right, right. I mean, I definitely. So that's a hope. Maybe in a year or two we'll be talking again about how she's in some big big award winning film out there, and let's hope But
absolutely. I'll cast her in anything.
Definitely. And I think if she got the opportunity to be in, the type of film that gets exposure,
totally.
A big level, I think she'd be the kind of person that'd be sitting there, at the Oscars, because her performance was just fantastic. So definitely. And I mean, honestly, everything about this film was well done. And so let me ask you a question as a producer, because, I had a previous discussion with a, Hollywood producer who used to be an indie director named Leon Korkos, who I met him on the internet through the fact that I'm doing a project watching every Victor Wong movie this year.
Uh-huh.
And he directed a really weird, obscure one in the 90s. And and so in talking to him on the podcast, he was talking about how, producers vary on levels of involvement. Sometimes a producer might be someone who's just financial backing, and sometimes it might be someone who is intimately involved. How intimately involved with this project were you?
Very intimately involved. And I did, at the outset, I was financially contributing to the film.
Sure.
But then, I was on set every day.
That's
and
awesome.
Since it was my first time producing, it was a little bit of trial by fire. Trey, so I think we did break up the responsibilities pretty effectively. Justin, one of our producers, he handled some of the scheduling stuff, and Chase, who is also an actor by trade, we did have one SAG actress in the movie, and that was Olivia, who is the mother, the young mother in the film.
Okay.
And so he, and so when you have, even at, we were the ultra low budget designation, but when you have the SAG, a SAG performer in your movie, you still have to go through all this paperwork and make sure everything, the production is sort of kosher with, their
right.
standards. And so he handled that, and I was, Trey was like, Wilson, can you get production insurance? And I said, sure, no problem. And so I learned all about the wonderful world of getting production insurance and scheduling, getting all the equipment, and sort of estimating what all that would be worth. And so, yeah. And then I mean, it was all, you know, such a small crew. It was kind of always all hands on deck. And so I've got an SUV and, we rented our gear here in Austin, and I went and picked it up the morning before we were going to be filming. And yeah. I shoved it all. I mean, yeah, I've got pictures from back in the day, and it's kind of amazing. I can't believe I got it all in there, but just like put all my seats down and shoved all the equipment in there. And then I drove, I took it 3 hours to Montgomery, Texas, where the house was. And, you know, and then I did the same thing once we were done, you know, 9 days later when we were finished, I packed it all back up and drove it back. So I was doing all sorts of, not normal producer work. But that is to say that, you know, on a movie that small, we were, you know, it was sort of everybody was doing whatever they were sort of capable of and what could reasonably be assigned to them. And so, yeah, I was very, I was very involved in
awesome.
Pre-show production.
That's awesome. Are you interested in working on, you know, going into the world of directing as well?
The answer to that is yes. But I'm not, I'm my real interest, at least, you know, right now, and as, you know, growing up is in writing. And
okay.
That does, you know, obviously I do write screenplays, and, I've gotten close to directing a few of the shorts that I've written, but then for one reason or another, one of them ended up being directed by someone else, and, it's one of those things where that the answer is yes, but I'm not like, you know, like, oh, I got to do it right. Like, I want to sort of, you know, to do a short, get my, you know, sort of test the waters for myself just to make, you know.
Right.
You know,
so for you, it's writing that you're
yes.
most interested in. Okay.
Yes. And that movies are, you know, my passion
mm-hmm.
as far as, you know, I watch, you know, as many movies as I can, and, you know, I love to talk about and write about movies. But also, you know, as far as my creative interests lie, you know, I would love to write a novel as well as a screenplay.
Okay, cool.
And so that's sort of my, and that sort of fits right now with where I'm at as far as, like, you know, since Kreisha has kind of blown up and I have, you know, gotten more and, you know, taken a few more steps into the world of producing and not just on Trey stuff either. That sort of it works out as of right now where it's like, oh, I can sort of, you know, when I'm not making my own stuff, I can at least be helping people that I know get their stuff made.
Sure. That's awesome. And
yeah.
that's definitely really cool. And so it sounds like, you know, you're heading in the direction you wanted to go in. So that works out.
Yeah,
you know?
it's nice, and it's kind of a, you know, there's and everybody, you know, everybody has this, no matter what industry they're in, I think, but because of the nature of the film business, and especially, like, you know, freelance, when you're working freelance stuff, there's that, like, you know, it's like, oh man, like, what, I don't see how exactly I take this next step here. Like, I've just been PAing, and I don't really know what. So, you know, having that happen and sort of being able to, you know, take a sort of a step into, and especially with this next movie with, you know, bigger budgets
right,
and
right.
just more moving parts, you know, I feel really, it's been a really sort of gratifying year to be like, oh, okay, like, whew, I guess I was sort of on the right path.
Awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, just you mentioned that you, you know, you love movies, you write about movies, you watch a lot of movies. Just
yeah.
out of curiosity, what are some of the movies you've seen so far this year that have, you know, been your favorites?
Well, actually, the other night I watched a movie that I missed at South by Southwest last year because Kreisha was there, and, you know, I didn't have time to see a lot of other films, but I watched The Invitation.
Just picked up a copy on VOD, and I'm looking forward to watching it this week. Yeah.
Yeah, it was it's one of those things where I'd heard, you know, for a year now, basically, I'd heard just so much hype And it kind of, it's one of those things where when you hear, at least for me, you know, at a certain point, I kind of try to tune all that out because it can kind of turn into like white noise of like,
mm-hmm.
oh yeah, like everyone says it's so great. And then like, you know, I have this like almost without thinking about it, you know, a certain expectation.
Sure.
But I thought the Invitation was fantastic. Just a awesome. Really wonderful slow burn, sort of movie. As far as, you know, oh, and I also recently saw the new, his name, Apichapitapong, Wirasikathol. He just goes by Joe, the man who made Uncle Boon Me, who can recall his past lives. His new film, Cemetery of Splendor, is really, really fantastic. No one is making movies like he is. I'll go ahead and go on record as saying that I enjoyed Batman vs Superman.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, whatever. I'll throw that out there.
I haven't seen it yet. I have a Batman tattoo, if that shows you like where I'm at with Batman.
Oh, nice.
So I'm a Batman fan. You know, some of the things I hear about the film trouble me. You know,
Totally.
You know, now that said, you know, even the Keaton Batman, which is one of my favorite movies in the world, you know.
Yeah.
In that movie, you know, he's not really Batman in that movie either.
You know,
it's
a thing where I think my appreciation comes from a little bit of a different. I might be coming from a different place than a lot of the people maybe reviewing it, or you know, I'm admittedly not a big Superman guy. I'm a big Batman
guy.
But I'm not a big Superman guy, and so the arguments about Superman in the film are totally lost on me. And so for me, you know, the way Zack Snyder and Henry Cavill and, you know, the way they portrayed him in two movies now, I find kind of interesting. He seems kind of complex in a way that I'm not used to seeing that character. And granted, I'm you know, that might just be ignorance on my part. But, yeah, it's a thing where I appreciate it after all the Marvel stuff has been dominating the world for the past couple of years. I appreciated getting to play around in some of the weird DC stuff, and just generally, this seems to make a lot of people mad, but just the general aesthetic of it, I was like,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is different, and I, you know, some people to that, you know, some people are like, yeah, it's different, but it's, you know, not good. But for me, I just found it really, really intriguing. I don't know. I think Zack Snyder is a.
Do you tend to be a Snyder fan?
Well, it's one of those things where I defended Sucker Punch when it came out. I think it's I think it's ultimately a failure, but
right.
I think it's an interesting failure, and I think
uh-huh.
that's the kind of thing that gets lost in, you know, in the era of, you know, with film Twitter and Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic and the way that people can just sort of sling those scores around as though they're
mm-hmm.
proof of something. You know, I think that, you know, people kind of that I know who I talk to about movies are like, oh, Wilson, don't you love Sucker Punch? And I'm like, no, I've never said that I love that movie. I have said that it is more interesting than people give it credit for. And I think that's probably where I've told people, I'm like, I know for a fact that in a year people are going to be like, Wilson, didn't you really love Batman Superman? And I'm going to be like, no, I didn't love it.
I
didn't think it. I just thought that it was more interesting than most people are giving it credit for. And I don't. You know, in my very subjective opinion, like to me, when I'm the kind of guy who finds like if there's something that I really like in a movie, even if it's surrounded by things that aren't so great, I tend to focus in on like, oh man, but what about that part or what about this aspect? So that's sort of, you know, and so Snyder in general, I have felt that. I really, really like Watchmen a lot. That's sort of his – that's the one movie of his that I'm like, yes, you got it.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that movie.
But other than that, I've just sort of thought, you know, Sucker Punch was a miss, but an interesting miss. I thought that Man of Steel, not – you know, certainly not great, but more – you know, again, sort of a more interesting take on Superman. And, yeah, spoiler alert, I just did not – care at the end when people were like, oh, Superman doesn't kill people, how can he like break? I'm like, guys, that was the most interesting part of the movie for me, like, you know, sorry, I thought that was like a good way to
I find Superman
movie.
Extremely dull too. I have actually not watched Man of Steel, but the more I hear about how he's not portrayed the same way as Superman should be, and the more I'm actually interested in Poppy there. Because,
What's interesting, and it's kind of funny, and this is like, you know, maybe the way we accidentally like back into this subject, but it's like,
yeah.
You know, I've noticed that I was talking to someone else about it, and I've noticed that a lot of these people, because people are angry about this movie,
really?
and
on both sides.
Yeah, and what's funny is that the way people talk about Superman and Batman to an extent in the movie, it does feel to me, it sounds, it has the same sort of tenor as the arguments about, well, like, Jesus' words in the gospel, this is actually what he meant. Like, Jesus, a true Christian wouldn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, guys, Superman is, you know, is what Superman would do in any given situation is more or less judged by who is writing him. Like, he's not real. So it's
right.
This weird, like, there's this weird strain of fundamentalism running through the superhero
that's
conversation
really
right now.
That is interesting. And that's the thing is, like, that's why I'm, despite the fact that I like, part of what I love about Batman is the fact that he doesn't kill.
Sure.
However,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean that in the films where he does kill, I hate it necessarily, because I think it's a different take on Batman, and maybe he's not the same Batman that caused me to get my tattoo, but I still think it's freaking cool. You know, I absolutely love the old, the 89, you know, Keaton Batman and Batman Returns. I actually like Batman and Robin and Batman Forever. I don't love them, but I like them. I think they're fun. And they're where they are. They're cheesy comic book movies. They're great to watch with my kids.
Sure.
And especially, I mean, Batman and Robin is just like it's a live-action comic book. That's
mm-hmm.
exactly what it is. And is it good? No. But do I think it's fun? Yeah. And, like, so I have no problem with, you know, looking at different takes on it, you know. And so even though, like, the fundamentalist Batman lover in me does say, well, that's not right. That's not how Batman is. The logical part of the rest of me says, well, I can still have a good time with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that's kind of where I'm approaching. And, like, I want to see the movie, but not enough to go pay for it in a theater, probably.
Certainly.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking for, you know, I saw it opening night and had a really, you know, I went with a buddy and we went to a draft house and had a few beers and had, you know, both of us walked out of it, you know, saying that we had enjoyed the experience. And I think, you know, beyond that, like, I'm curious to see Snyder's, you know, director's cut, the, you know, much ballyhooed R-rated 3-hour thing.
Right.
Just because I think that, I
address some of the continuity and stuff like that, maybe. You
yeah,
know.
And I think that, you know, the thing about, you know, more nuance in the conversation. You know, I just think that, and it was sort of, it's, you know, again, it's sort of similar to my reaction to Sucker Punch, where I'm like, you know, what was wrong with Sucker Punch was that I think Snyder as a screenwriter, because that's the only one he's written himself. He was not like he didn't quite have the thematic grasp that he kind of needed to pull off what he was doing.
Right.
But you know, to witness the conversation around that movie, it was just like, LOL, Snyder, you're an idiot. Like, you're just this, you know, you're this jock filmmaker and you're exploiting women, even though, you know, Snyder himself protested in interviews that, no, the film is about the exploitation of women in geek culture. And, you know, and I don't think I think that the reason the movie's a failure is he doesn't quite get to that point. But it's there. The intent is there, and it's, I mean, like, the movie is...
I think I saw that from the door. I mean, that's something I picked up on. Not necessarily that it was fleshed out well, but just the fact that I could tell that's what it was going for.
Yeah.
And that
to me is like, I think when I see things that are interesting like that in these, you know, these interesting ideas in these mega budget superhero movies, you know, these big budget blockbusters, and, you know, Batman Superman got so much flack for, like, well, you know, it thinks it's serious and profound, and it just has characters like spouting off philosophical, you know, Lex Luthor talking about, you know, if God is all powerful, then he can't be all good, and if he's all good, he can't be all powerful. And I'm like, you know, I get it. Like, that's not, like, it certainly doesn't make the movie some, like, incredibly thoughtful treatise on the idea of superheroes, but I still appreciated it. I still thought, like, oh, that's you know, I'm, you know, it gets you thinking, and at the very least, the people involved with the movie were examining it from a, okay, like, what if this happened in the real world? And honestly, I find that more compelling and interesting some of the time than the in the Avengers, where they have these sort of tossed off lines of like, oh, we saved everyone. Don't worry, we evacuated everyone. Like, we saved the city, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, that's one way to do it. That's very, you know, it's obviously playing into the fantasy aspect of it. But then when, you know, I don't know, it's weird how everyone sort of recoils, you know, adults in large part, mm-hmm. sort of instinctively, recoil at what, you know, this attempt to even tie it into, like, you know, the 9/11 metaphor of you know, the beginning of Batman Superman with the destruction of Metropolis and all that stuff.
Sure.
It's, yeah, so, you know, long story short, I think that at the very least, I'm maybe a little more forgiving than a lot of people that I know, but I also appreciated what, you know, sort of the ambition and what was, and as my friend, my buddy who saw it with me, we've talked about it since we watched it and sort of about the reaction, and he said, and I think this, you know, is sort of key to what I liked about the movie, is he said, like, oh, the plot does not make a lot of logical sense, but the movie, the whole thing plays, like, it makes emotional sense. Like, the mm-hmm. whole thing is, like, this very weird, almost, like, nightmarish, dreamlike, you know, and maybe that's because Snyder doesn't have a good handle on narrative. Or maybe that, or, you know, or maybe, I don't know. It's interesting.
Could be a script problem.
Yeah, but it certainly has script problems. But I think that, you know, that's not, in my opinion, that's not nearly as much of a smoking gun as other people find that to be. People are like, oh, man, the script, I found these plot holes. This is a bad movie. I'm like, yeah, no, not really.
There's plot holes in a lot of movies that I love. I mean, it just is what it is. But, you know,
yeah.
That said, you know, it's really interesting to me that as a film, there was so much chatter about how awful it was before people saw it.
Right.
Which is ridiculous. Like,
yep.
I can't think of a movie that had that much anti, you know, sentiment about it from people who had not seen it or barely even seen, you know, trailers. You know, I mean, there was a little bit here, and then suddenly they hate the movie. And I don't know what that's about, honestly.
It was a very weird, you know, it was a very weird sort of thing to watch. And I have to admit that I've actually, you know, on Twitter, I had to, just for my own sort of, because it was kind of like annoying me, I kind of had to unfollow and mute a lot of people that I follow sort of in the film Twitter world, because it was just, I mean, and it still kind of is with, like, you know, people openly gloating about the fact that it's, you know, quote unquote, underperforming at the box office, you know, the big hit that it took in its second weekend, you know, all these, you know, these self-professed film fans who are gloating, you're gloating at the prospect that a movie that they didn't like, or just a movie maybe they didn't even see, is failing at the box office. And I don't understand that attitude. And I think maybe a lot of that is the Marvel DC thing, and how that has, like, unfortunately, in my opinion, transferred over into film, like that sort of a new introduction to film culture, where it's like all of a sudden you have people, it's like Apple or something, like people openly rooting or sort of not in the tank, that's too accusatory, but people very much like, oh man, I like Marvel can do no wrong, it's like this great big corporate behemoth, but, like, you know, I thought that when Edgar Wright, I was certain that when Edgar Wright got fired from Ant-Man, that there was going to be, like, people were going to sort of turn on Marvel and be like, oh, like, more realize, like, they're not about having interesting people come in and make interesting movies.
No, they're about making money. I mean, listen,
yeah, but then
I mean, mind you, I love Ant-Man. I can't pretend I didn't, but
seeing, but I found Ant-Man enjoyable as well, in that way that I have found most of those Marvel movies to be, like, mildly enjoyable. I love the first Avengers. That to me was the pinnacle. They've never come anywhere close since then, in my opinion. But
I would put Guardians as my top, but
I enjoyed Guardians. I think I had maybe expectations for, you know, but it was another one of those things where everyone was like, man, this movie's so crazy weird. And I'm like, yeah, it has, like, if it had been
It's weird for Marvel. Let's go with
right.
that. It's not
and
weird.
It's not really
it's science
weird
fiction.
Compared to, like, Buffy
Science fiction's
Bandai.
Always weird. Let's be honest. Like, you know, I just watched The Ice Pirates for the first time yesterday. If you want to talk about weird, you know, that makes Guardians look like it was, you know, the most normal thing in the world.
But I think this, but, you know, with some of the, you know, also, you know, talking to some of my friends about, like, why the huge, like, this hugely negative, like, the gleefully spiteful attitude towards this movie. And, you know, I think that part of it also makes me think, it's like, oh, this must be, like, if social media had been around when The Phantom Menace came out. Like, not that it would have, I mean, it's a Star Wars movie, so it still would have made money hand over fist, I'm sure. But, you know, if that backlash of The Phantom Menace had, you know, if it had just been a nonstop drumbeat of people being like, oh, man, like, oh, LOL, this movie's going to suck. LOL, this movie sucks. People who like this movie suck. You know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, I kind of wonder, it's, you know, comparing it to Phantom Menace is instructive for me because that's another movie where I find it heavily flawed, but interesting and fascinating, and some parts to be quite good. And
sure.
The reaction to when people, you know, when Force Awakens came out back in December, there were people online saying, like, oh, like, anyone who tries to, like, go back and say nice things about the prequels is not to be trusted. So, like, it's still, like, people consider The Phantom Menace, like, one of the worst movies ever made. And it's just, like,
I know. I take flack because I like all six movies. Well, seven now. Because I like all six. I mean, the second movie is, episode two is by far the worst one.
Yep.
However, I'll still watch it. I mean, you know, I won't watch it often, but I'll still watch it.
Sure. It was totally painless when I revisited it before Force Awakens. I was not looking forward to it. I was like, oh no, this is the one that I really don't like. And then watching it, I was like, oh, okay, like, I can suffer through the romance and, you
sure.
know, sort of focus in on the, and that's also, that actually might be John Williams' best, in my opinion, it could be his best score for any of the movies.
Wow, that's crazy. And actually, and it's funny, in the purest Star Wars folks, God forbid you ever tell them that George Lucas never knew how to write dialogue, and it was never...
Oh, Jesus.
You know what I mean? Like, in fact, that was one of the best things about the newest movie, is like, oh my God, this dialogue that actually kind of feels a little more natural. You know?
Right. Yeah. Abrams definitely brought that, like, the banter aspect. He gives good banter in his movies.
Sure, sure.
And it does feel, you know, it's witty and funny, and it feels like, you know, it feels like it comes from the characters. I think that's... But... the George Lucas thing is also in keeping with the, you know, that's the thing where, you know, you see, it's like, if you just, you know, if you sort of take the movies out of the equation, if you sort of, like, just thinking about it in the abstract, and it's like, okay, those, you know, this man who, this guy who created had this vision, he told this story that he wanted to tell, despite a lot of people telling him that it was bad, and that he, you know, so he's like, no, he sort of just, like, went ahead with his vision. And then, you know, after everyone, you know, so many people hated it, it's like, well, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm done with it. I'm going to sell it to, like, one of the biggest corporations on Earth, and they'll just sort of farm it out in perpetuity
right.
to, like, continue
yeah.
making money. And the, like, the reaction to that was, I guess, you know, it's a little bit disheartening for a guy who, you know, would like, for me, who would like to support individual visions and interesting visions. And, you know, the thing that comes with that is sometimes those, you know, you won't like that vision. Sometimes
sure.
you're like, no, I think this is, you know, stupid. But
sure.
it's all, but I think that you know, as much as I enjoyed Force Awakens, and I do want to stress, I really, really liked that movie a lot.
Right.
It's also that feeling of, you know, there's that, but then there's also, you know, there's the Phantom Menace, which is super flawed and not as good, you know, probably not, you know, in my opinion, it's I don't think it's as good a movie as The Force
Awakens. You know what? Phantom Menace, in a lot of ways, is more ambitious because
yeah, totally.
Force Awakens follows the formula of Episode 4 to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
And now it does it differently, and I love it. I mean, I love the movie. And maybe, you know, it's probably one of my favorites actually already, and I've only watched it a handful of times. But that said, it Phantom Menace tried to do something different. It didn't, you know, at all. In fact, I think that because it stayed similarly and it got such an ovation and whatever, we might be able to see a little bit more divergence with the next movie, you know. And I'm excited about it. However, you know, when they came out with Phantom Menace, they came out different from the bat, and I think that's what turned, you know, people off.
Right.
To a large extent, too. You know, I mean, Phantom Menace has become one of my favorites, actually, because I have kids. I mean, watching that movie through the eyes of a kid is completely different. You know,
right.
And you know, but nonetheless, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just that, you know, I think that, I guess I just sort of wish that, you know, in the way that I think about movies, and you know, it's kind of funny because Krisha actually coming out at the, you know, being in theaters at the same time as Batman Superman.
Sure.
I mean, Max Landis of all people tweeted the weekend that Batman Superman came out, and he was like, "America, the Serpent and the Rainbow, and Krisha are out. Like actual good movies. You can go see those movies." And he got retweeted, he got retweeted a couple hundred times and liked and all that, favorited, whatever. And I was like, you know, it's funny because, like, for the first time, I actually do have, you know, something of, like, a financial interest in a movie's box office performance.
Sure.
But it's also funny because, you know, this, you know, to me, like, this notion that they're in any way comparable, or that there was anyone.
Yeah, they're not going after the same audience all that often. I mean,
They were going to the people were going to the theater to see Krisha, and then they saw that it was a new Batman, and they were like, "What?" And then they just like veered off. It's like, no, that's absurd. So like, it's such a false.
right.
We're so like on different ends of the filmmaking spectrum.
Sure.
But it's a, you know, I think that, you know, I would like to, at all costs, I would like to champion or I would like to emphasize the unique or the, you know, anything that's like a little bit outside of the box, whether I think that's necessarily, whether it works or it doesn't work. And so I think that, you know, it's one thing if people are just like, Batman, Superman, I did not like that movie, you know, whatever. But I can't understand
the vitriol.
Yeah, I can't understand the seeming glee. And people who hated the movie are going to see it a second time and writing more about how much they hate it. It's like I've seen more and more. It feels like as we've like gone along, and I'm like, when is this gonna? I just can't even like. It's not. It's making the comic book thing. Like I have no desire to see Civil War. Because I have no desire to participate in that conversation. I have no desire to, like, participate in the, like, oh, well, like, you know, this, you know, like, oh, what a corrective to blah, 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 and what a, like, you know, I thought Winter Soldier was fine, and I think that the trailers to Civil War look all right, but I'm just so, after, again, like, the fundamentalism of it, I think, has sort
That's
of...
That's funny.
Yeah, it's like when someone gets a little burned out at a church or something, and it's like, oh,
sure,
I need to, like, sort of figure out what I saw in this from the beginning, you know, figure out my connection to it, because right now I'm seeing all this other stuff and it's so far from my feelings on the matter.
Right. Well, I'm not like a big Avengers, like none of the Avengers characters are any of my top favorite comic book characters.
Sure.
I don't hate them, but I think Civil War looks really interesting. However, it looks interesting mostly because it looks a little different than the other stuff that Marvel's done. And the biggest issue they often have is that stuff really just feels the same.
Exactly.
So, you know, and that's why I think that's why Guardians is so refreshing. But that said, you know, you want to talk about comic book movies that I'm excited about, you know, Apocalypse coming out, you know, and I'm going to go nuts on that because Now, I'm a huge X-Men fan, and even the ones that people don't like, I like them those. So, you know, that's not true. I don't X-Men 3, I don't really watch. But that was bad. But yeah. Nonetheless, you know, I still gave it a whirl. I still own a copy of it, believe it, you know, either way. But
I'm curious about, I guess it'll be in 2017, but I'm really curious about the sequel to The Wolverine, just because after Deadpool, they were like, hey, why don't you make this Wolverine movie rated R? And it's like, oh, okay, like, I guess we'll do that.
I'd love to see Wolverine in a rated R movie.
I thought the first two thirds of The Wolverine were like this really, really fun, almost like throwback, like 80s, like Yakuza action movie.
Right.
And then it devolved into sort of, you know, CGI nonsense at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious about Apocalypse. Talking about Guardians, I don't know if they're gearing up to do this in the second one. It kind of seemed like they were setting something up at the end of Avengers 2. But as far as, like, getting me interested in Marvel stuff again, call me when they make a Planet Hulk movie. Like, if they get Hulk, if they get Hulk in space.
With them moving towards all the, Infinity Gauntlet stuff and all, there's some overlap there that might be interesting.
I think, to me, like, if they get truly, you know, truly odd with it, then I can sort of groove with that.
Like, I'm hoping they do something interesting with the Adam Warlock character, because they kind of briefly introduced him, even though you didn't see him, you saw him in the collector's lair.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some characters that are really interesting to see if they go somewhere with. And I'm one of the five people in the world that wants a Howard the Duck reboot. So,
you know, I am, you know, I'm actually one of those two, and I think that... What was so funny was that when I watched Guardians in a theater, at the end of it, I was like, you know, I was a little less, I definitely enjoyed it. I was a little less high on it than a lot of people were.
Right.
But I remember saying like, and that was right after, I remember that movie came out while we were filming Kreisha. So I saw it like right when I got back to town. And I remember thinking, everyone was like, oh my gosh, like Marvel, like they really can do anything, because they made this movie with a talking tree and a talking raccoon,
mm-hmm.
and they opened it to number one, and it's this big audience favorite, and blah blah blah, and I get that totally, and that's no small feat, but at the same time, I was like, you know what, call me, like, if Marvel manages to, like, with all their clout, like, if they manage to launch a Howard the Duck movie, then and make that a success, then and only then will I finally, like, be on the same page as everyone else.
Bow to Marvel at that point.
Like, yeah, take that to the bank. If Marvel does that, who knows? Maybe they'll offer that to Trey. Maybe I'll be like, Trey, you should definitely take that Howard the Duck movie. you should, I know you don't have anything. You say you don't have anything interesting to say about it, but like, come on, you can just think about it. We'll get Leah Thompson in it. It'll be great.
We have some world building somehow overlap the Kreisha world. No,
exactly. I mean, he could totally film it. Like, he could tell people he'll film it like he filmed Kreisha, and then Marvel will be like, no.
They'll be like, no, we don't like movies that are interesting. But anyway, no, in all seriousness, I think that it's funny just looking at all these movies, like how different, you know, people come at them. And with the discussion that we started with the Batman and Superman, it more than any other film that I've experienced in a long time, at least, I saw more hate before the movie was even seen than I've ever seen before. That was what the thing is. And now, mind you, I don't like Superman, and that's just the way it is. I just don't. And I've tried, you know, and so maybe Man of Steel will be interesting to me. Maybe I should watch it, but nonetheless, so I think I'm going to let you go soon, because I'm looking at, we've been on the phone for a long time, but I'm enjoying our conversation, and it just means that we'll have to talk again soon. But before I let you go, where can folks find out more about Kreisha, more about you, you know, follow other stuff you're doing?
Yeah, Kreisha, it's currently, like I said, it's kind of finishing out its run, but you could, you know, if you live in city, if you live in, I know it's still playing in L.A. and I think San Francisco and Denver, and so, you know,
it still might be at the Ritz in Philly.
Oh yeah, I believe
the last weekend it was. So yeah,
and so, you know, you can look for it there, and then, you know, once that's gone, it'll probably it'll probably be out on home video sometime, you know, maybe later in the summer.
Okay.
And then, but yeah, and you can check for the times at CresciaMovie.com.
Okay.
And you can find me on Twitter at Sailor Goodspeed.
Okay.
And that's where I keep people updated on what I'm doing and what's annoying me at any given moment.
That's what Twitter's for.
So. Exactly.
Awesome, man.
Well, I appreciate the discussion, and we will definitely have to talk again soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, and yeah, we'll have to do this again.
Go to sleep, go to sleep. Go to sleep, my sweet baby, and in your dreams we'll go walking through the garden and sip the dew. And when you wake, I'll be here, I'll be here just for you. So go to sleep, little baby. Never fear, I'll be near. Go to sleep, little baby. I will always be.
He's like a quirky uncle or something, you know? And,
exactly.
And I have those, for sure. You know, so I get
yeah.
it. You know?
He's got that like, crazy awesome, like, Sonic the Hedgehog hair where it's just like sticking up and like all
yeah.
like whatever.